Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
I'm quite proud of our collective effort. It's not done by government only, but it's also because people were willing.
This week, we're reporting from Berlin Questions, a conference that gathered local leaders to discuss the future of urban areas after what's been one of the most challenging years. We speak with the mayor of Istanbul and hear about the delicate relationship between City Hall and central government. We check in with the governor of Jakarta as climate change continues to be the biggest threat to urban life there. And Warsaw's deputy mayor tells us about how the global pandemic has accelerated city improvements. All that and more coming up right here in the next 30 minutes on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So welcome to the programme. Last week, Germany played host in person and remotely to an array of leaders at an event called Berlin Questions. They were all ready to discuss their city's most pressing issues and also the challenges ahead for local governments worldwide. From climate change to pandemic recovery, the past 18 months have shown how resilient cities need to be and just how important it is to have good leadership in the mayor's office. So, for this week's episode, we thought we'd check in with a few of them to hear about how their city has been faring so far. We begin today in Turkey with Ekrem İmamoğlu, the mayor of Istanbul. Mayor İmamoğlu's election to the top seat in the city wasn't without its challenges, but his mandate from the people of Istanbul has only grown stronger over time, and he is a leader with the confidence to challenge the government where he sees his citizens' best interests aren't being considered. Mayor İmamoğlu, thank you for joining me. Now, we're intrigued to see today how different cities have coped with the challenges of the pandemic over the past 18 months. What's your view on how Istanbul has fared so far?
The COVID-19 pandemic has turned life upside down everywhere, as the same in Istanbul. When the pandemic hit in March 2020, some new great economic and social challenges were added to the long list of problems faced by Istanbul. But I can tell you that these difficulties did not change our path. With determination, we achieved historic examples of solidarity in this city. During the pandemic period, one out of every four households in Istanbul needed, unfortunately, social assistance. We directed the available resources straight to the urgent needs of the citizens. Our priority was to fight increasing levels of urban poverty, strengthen agricultural production, support healthcare workers, especially artists, tradespeople, homeless people, and vulnerable groups. To this end, we created an unprecedented citywide solidarity platform called Pay It Forward, which matches anonymous donors with people unable to pay their utility bills. So although we have had many problems, I can say that the spirit of social solidarity in our city has been the hallmark of the pandemic period.
Now tell me, when you were elected, there was a real sense of renewal of trust in democracy in the country. How do you think that people in the city feel about this now?
This is in fact very true. The local elections of March 31st, 2019 were a very important turning point in the history of democracy in my country. The people's faith in democracy showed itself at the ballot box, and I have noted this down. That day, 16 million Istanbulites reflected their free will on the ballot box and elected me as the mayor of Istanbul. However, various manipulations occurred that night to ignore the will of the people, and efforts were spent to change the election results. We managed to fend off all these efforts together with 16 million Istanbulites. However, these efforts changed form and resurfaced 36 days later as an unfair election annulment. But that evening, together with the people of Istanbul, we filled the squares and said, "We will never give up our struggle for democracy, and we will protect the will of the nation until the end." And that's how it happened. We won a great democratic victory in front of Turkey and the whole world on June 23, 2019, along with 16 million Istanbulites. The people elected me as the mayor of Istanbul for a second time with a margin of nearly 1 million. So yes, we can clearly say that we have seen together that trust in democracy is at the highest level in my country. Indeed, this is also how it has been perceived all over the world. Our citizens still act with this love of democracy. They never harbor despair in their hearts.
Now tell me, what are the challenges and the opportunities that come with being an opposition mayor?
In democracies and in countries where constitutional law applies, it should make no difference if a mayor is elected from the ruling party or the opposition party. Constitutions and laws determine in the best way who or what institution will have what kind of duties and powers. Everyone tries to fulfill their duty within those limits. For this reason, even addressing this question as the mayor of Istanbul upsets me. Yes, of course, it poses some challenges, unfortunately. But as I said before, we continue to serve by turning these difficulties into opportunities with the power of our citizens. We try to include every relevant citizen and institution in our decision-making process. We always make sure to meet with our stakeholders around a table and discuss everything. I will continue to work this way.
What are the biggest challenges to do with climate change and Istanbul that you're facing over the coming years?
Our city is situated in a unique location where several different microclimates exist simultaneously. Therefore, the vitality of ecosystems depends on a very delicate balance. We are well aware that we need to take the climate crisis more seriously than any other metropolitan city in the world. Also, as you may know, Istanbul recently experienced a mucilage invasion, also known as a sea snot invasion. One reason for this problem in the Marmara Sea was sea pollution, and the other reason was the increase in seawater temperatures due to direct effect of global warming. And the recurrence of forest fires that the Mediterranean basin faced last month is a nightmare scenario for us. On the other hand, there are also unprecedented floods in different parts of the world. And unfortunately, the increasing fragility of Istanbul, especially with neoliberal policies, gives us signs that the coming years may not be easier. You may have heard of the planned Istanbul Canal project, which is expected to damage Istanbul's ecology irreversibly. This is also why we are against this canal. We are against everything and anything that will increase the vulnerability of Istanbul in the face of the climate crisis.
And finally, what do you think Istanbul is able to do perhaps better than other cities in the region and in Europe? What are the strengths you see in Istanbul?
Thank you. It's a great question. Honestly, it will be very difficult to reduce the age-old city of Istanbul to only one thing. And it will be a serious injustice to Istanbul's long history. But my answer will be solidarity. It's a city where people come together, a city which has faced disasters, but has continued to be stronger again and again in the face of all these, ensuring the solidarity of 16 million people from different cultures and walks of life is our greatest superpower. As we have seen once again during the pandemic, the strong culture of conscience and fraternity in the city strengthens our struggle against the difficulties we face. As the municipality, we continue our work with an inclusive and equal service approach that embraces each and every one of the beautiful people of this beautiful city. This makes us a rich, colorful, and powerful society that no other city in the world can imagine.
Ekrem İmamoğlu, Mayor of Istanbul, thank you for sharing your city's story with us today. Next, we head to Indonesia to speak to Anies Baswedan, the current serving governor of Jakarta. In the 1990s, Baswedan was one of the student leaders who helped bring down the regime of President Suharto. And in 2009, he was included in the World Economic Forum's list of young global leaders. Today, the governor is leading one of the largest cities in the world through challenges that are far-reaching and not just those presented by the global pandemic. Governor Baswedan, thank you for speaking with me today. We'll start with that most recent issue, the COVID-19 pandemic. Many countries across Europe are starting to return to some form of normality at the moment, while other countries like Australia are retreating into yet more lockdowns. What's the situation at the moment in Jakarta?
Our first wave was peak in February 21. We sort of able to flatten the curve until around May, 3 months ago. Then beginning of June, we experienced an exponential growth of active cases here in Jakarta as a result of the spread of the Delta variants. And when I mention exponentially, I mean it, because every 8 days, active cases was doubled. So it was very alarming. And we reached the peak in July with 113,000 active cases. However, since then, now we have less than 8,000 active cases.
Tell me, how has that been done? Has that been using the same measures you see in other countries, in other cities where you have a lockdown, people are told to stay at home? What measures did you use to so dramatically turn around the numbers in Jakarta?
So number one is mobility restrictions. Only those who were working in the critical and essential sectors were allowed to go outside their homes and work at the office or in their working stations. And then number two, testing, tracing, and isolations were done in a very aggressive way. The WHO required a minimum testing of 1,000 per 1 million populations. At that time, we reached more than 20 times of the requirement for WHO. And then tracing aspect. Right after we found someone who were positive, we did the tracing of finding individuals who are interacting with those positive found person, and then isolations or quarantine. And we have set up quarantine facility. These are our housing complex that has been built but not yet used. So these are vacants. So whenever we found someone who are positive, we require them to stay in the controlled quarantine facility. Meals were provided, medicines were provided, and also a regular medical checkup from our medical team. So these are the combinations that we adopted as our policy.
And tell me the mood in the city, because, you know, everyone thinks of Jakarta as this bustling, busy city, lots of traffic, lots of life lived on the street. How has the city coped with 18 months and more now of being in lockdowns, of people not being on the streets, doing business face to face? What's the mood in the city?
In July, I think the mood was quite, blue, or feeling of uneasiness toward the situations. Now, seeing the result of that trying period, now the mood is we want to get out. People were eager to see that they're able to go back to work again, able to go to park again. So now excitement were there. You know, I must say, I'm quite proud of our collective achievement, because going down from 100,000 active cases into less than 8,000 cases in less than 4 weeks, that is truly a collective effort. It's not done by government only, but it's also because people were willing.
Now, the other big question I must ask you about is climate change. It affects every city, really, in the world. Everybody has to face issues of resilience. But Jakarta has some very special problems. It's seen as a city that is slowly sinking, very threatened by flooding. And the debate is now about moving the government headquarters out of the city. First of all, how perilous is it at the moment for Jakarta? And what can you do to protect the city?
With regard to climate change, allow me to share also some experience during the pandemic. Number of cyclists in Jakarta has increased 10 times. When you look at our road nowadays, completely different than 2 years ago. And then number two, we experience blue skies. In a city like Jakarta, blue skies were rare experience. And then during the pandemic, with the mobility restrictions, suddenly blue sky is not something that you can only watch on movie, but you can actually take picture of your city with beautiful buildings and a beautiful blue sky as a background. So it gives us an opportunity to campaign for a blue sky project, reduce emissions, and then promote a more green-oriented lifestyle. So that's one part because of the pandemic. Now, with regard to the issue of the sinking, there are two reasons why the issue of sinking become a conversation. Number one, the land subsidence that has been happening in the city for the past few decades. And then number two is because the rise of the sea level. So there are two issues here. Now, with regard to the land subsidies, we are grateful that our programs in providing water to households in Jakarta has significantly reduced land subsidies problem in Jakarta. So one problem that we are confronted has been somewhat in the right directions and hopefully soon completely solved. The second issue is the rise of the sea level. Now, the rise of sea level, this is a worldwide problem. Many cities in the coastal area across the globe is facing that challenge. So on that aspect, I think it's a global effort that needs to be done. On our part, our approach was to build wall along the coastal area of Jakarta. It stretches for about 32 kilometers along the northern coastal. So that's our effort to be able to maintain the coastal area dry and less impacted from the rise of the seawater.
You know, this decision to build a new capital for Indonesia, stripping Jakarta of some of its importance. What do you think of this decision? And do you think that the new capital city will see a decline for Jakarta and its significance?
Jakarta today is the result of an evolution that takes place for more than 300 years, and it has become the hub of economic activity, cultural activities. So the web that has been developed in Jakarta will always be there, because this is not the result of government policy, but this is the result of a long history of evolutions in our city and also in our nations. All infrastructure as a hub of Indonesia is here, be it airports, be it ports, be it the soft infrastructures of people. So Jakarta will continue to play its central role in the nations of Indonesia and in terms of the state as well. Now, with regard to the capital city that is planned by the central government to be relocated to East Kalimantan, we respect that decision and also the plan, but I can assure you that Jakarta will continue to be the center of economic activities. Headquarters of all kinds are here. And even with the plan to relocate to East Kalimantan, they did not plan to relocate any government branch that relates to economic activity. So all government branches that relates to business, that relates to economic, will continue to be in Jakarta. So it is more of the official capital and the administrative side. So from our part, as someone who's managing the city of Jakarta, our challenge will not lessen even if the capital city is relocated.
Anies Baswedan, Governor of Jakarta, thank you for joining us. We finish our tour today in Poland with Deputy Mayor Michal Olszewski. His day job consists of supervising the work of the city departments in charge of architecture and spatial planning, urban and metropolitan policy, coordination of city development strategies, road traffic, and not to forget, city digitization. With a resume as busy as that, I'm happy to say that we've managed to capture a moment with the Deputy Mayor. Thank you for joining us today. Tell me, how do you think that Warsaw has fared over the past 18 months in regards to the pandemic? How do you think this has changed the city?
The most unexpected effect of the pandemic was that there was a lot of things that should be introduced much more faster than we expected to be before. But most unexpected thing about the pandemic time was that many of solutions that we actually introduced in the city just to survive, that was the same solutions that we expected to have before. The only effect of pandemia was that we introduced it much more faster and at much more broader effects that we expected before. One of the things is digitalization. We always had a discussion about, for example, distance learning and how to introduce distance learning in the city of Warsaw, but we never took it in place because there was no reason to do it, let's say, in such scale as we did it in during the pandemia time. The lesson learned from pandemia was that many of challenges that we faced before pandemia time, we actually overcome thanks to the pandemia and much more faster. Another effect of the pandemia that we had, which is also a bit surprising for us, is that people or the citizens are now expecting to do the changes that we are talking in our strategies much more faster than we had in our plan, like climate change or the modernization or amelioration of the public space is now expected to be done much more faster than we had in our plans, just because citizens understood that such a process like the pandemia make it happen in a few months. One of this example is one of our plan was to put the pedestrians from underpasses on the zebra crossing. Due to the very modernist model of the communication in the city, we still have many of such places where just to go from one to another part of the road, you have to use underpass instead of zebra crossing. And we always had a discussion in Poland how to do it. And because it usually causes a bit more traffic, for example, jams on the streets. So we always had a conflict between pedestrians and car users. But the pandemic time, for example, forced us to do the zebra crossing instead of underpasses, because people don't use masks on the zebra crossing. And when they go on the underpass, they have to wear the face mask. So it's just very surprising elements. And the general conclusion from the pandemic time is that we have the same challenges as we had before. Nothing changed in the challenges that we have ahead. The only thing that's changed is that we have to face those challenges much more faster and stronger, and to put much more effort to solve the problems that was before, because expectations of the citizens are now bigger than before.
The need to green the city, you've talked there about some of the real things happening on the street to change the city, but the greening of the city, I know, is something else that you're campaigning for. How quickly can you move on these issues as well to make more green space, to make the city more sustainable?
Unfortunately, with make the city green, it's not a quick win. So if we can change, for example, the public space like this zebra crossing instead of underpasses, it's quick win. You are just enter into the roads, you are painting the zebra crossing, and it's easy. And then you have an effect that you expected. With the green area and planting trees and making cities more green, it needs much more systematic approach. So you have to have a plan, you have to have the projects that you are implementing. But actually this year, we started modernization and amelioration of three big parks in the city of Warsaw. And it's also a sign of the times, because it somehow showed that just after pandemic time, we have much more expectations from the citizens to deliver them the public space, because the use of the public space is now much more frequent, or much more often people are using the public space that was before. And it's also, let's say, caused by the pandemic. But once again, this challenge we also had before, but we, before pandemic time, we had such feeling that we are following the expectations of the citizens, because the expectations were growing and growing very constantly. Just after the pandemic, it was like rocketing. People crowded the city like a day after lockdown. And it showed how this, let's say, need of being in the public space is represented among the citizens.
And tell me, that need to be in public space, does that extend to the work environment as well? You know, Warsaw has a skyline now with many high-rise buildings on, with many office towers. You've been successful at bringing in companies from all around Europe to Poland. Are people going back to their offices? Is that still the future of Warsaw, to be investing in its skyline like that?
We're observing the market. Actually, the pandemic time, we met the pandemic time at the same time when we are preparing the new special study. And in this special study, we already have many of information, many analyses. We had some new claims of changing the function of some areas in the city. As you know, it's very hard to change like this functions from the services to, for example, the residential. But we know from the analyses that as for now, without touching the pandemic effect, we know that we are short like 15% of the area that we should deliver for the housing. At the same time, we have more areas on the services that we need, which means that probably the offices are not so needed as before in the city of Warsaw. But still, we have a claim for the construction permit for the new buildings, also the skyscrapers, which is might be a bit a paradox. We're observing the market, and sometimes it's very hard, you know, to discuss with the investors, because sometimes they already have, for example, some of their own business plans to develop the areas, but we dialogue with them just to check if the assumptions for growing of this office space are still up to date.
Michal Olszewski, Deputy Mayor of Warsaw, thank you for joining us today. Well, that's all for this edition of The Urbanist. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Ribello and David Stevens. And David, well, of course, he edited the show. And to play you out of this week's episode, here's Foxy Jen with Follow the Leader. Thank you for listening, city lovers.